chickens in the houses, they got chickens in the trees, chicken in the pots, the mother of the Petaloomies. Out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Now Marvin got me started, sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20 and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Chicken in the morning, it's chicken in the night. Weren't for chicken, Petaluma never would have reached its height. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthfuls, smart talk about food, wine, and farming in Sonoma County, the North Bay, and beyond here on KRCB. It's Michelle and Jordan. Hope you're enjoying this lovely rainy day. Ah, it's so, you know, like water keeps falling from the sky. It's so exciting. Hope you've had a chance to get out and about anyway, maybe to the farmer's market yesterday or today. I should have reminded you last week, the farmer's market in Sebastopol has been moved into the town square for the month of December. That always happens. It's an agreement with the city when the market went year-round. They want to leave the parking lot free for Christmas shoppers. It also means if you go early, you get a nice parking spot, which was great. It was a lovely market today. And it's also a holiday crafts fair, holiday arts and crafts fair time. Last week we talked about Bijou and Holiday in Florence. I went to both today. And I have to tell you, our guest Naomi, and I'm not going to remember Naomi's last name right now, and neither is Mike, but I'll put it on the Facebook page. Naomi brought a murder of crows. We talked about that last week, and because I seemed so interested in it, she decided to set it up. And I'm not sure exactly how many crows, individual crows made of ceramic. They are beautiful. There must be maybe 11 of them. There's one very tiny one, which makes it appear that that one's flying in the distance. There's some that are bigger and closer up. And it's just one of the most exuberant, wonderful ceramic displays I've seen. It was all I could do not to take my rent money and buy it. It was really, really gorgeous. And then I joined the wonderful women at Holiday on Florence and sold some of my books. And it was just it's just so nice to see neighbors coming in and sitting with other artists and, you know, all kinds of craftspeople and going in and pouring a glass of wine in the kitchen, getting a nibble, signing some books and watching people buy art. It's just, it makes me love December again. You don't have to go where the craziness is. You can avoid it. And we have a big recommendation on how you can do just that next weekend. It is Schoengrown taking place, a big fair at the jewel of Santa Rosa Junior College, Schoen Farm. And have with us tonight Chelsea Colbeck and Chris Wills, who are taking part. So It's Sunday, right?
Actually, Saturday.
Oh, it's Saturday.
Yes.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
Sorry.
No, that's great, because I had said, I wonder what I'm doing on Saturday, because I said I couldn't go because I was otherwise engaged. And if I was mixing the days up, that means I might be able to attend.
Awesome. Hope you can.
I hope so, too. Yeah, it just sounds it sounds wonderful. It's a great place. So tell us about it.
Well, it's really our chance to release our new olive oil. Mm-hmm. And so this is an oil that is not in bottles yet. It's called Oleo Nuovo.
Oh, yes, Oleo Nuovo. Now is the time of year for it.
Yeah, and it was on the trees a month and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll allow it to settle another month and a half, maybe 2 months, and mm-hmm. then we'll do our bottling.
Right.
But for now, you can purchase it in if you bring your own container, or we can fill them on site there.
Uh-huh.
But it's an exciting oil, and I actually have a sample for you to try today.
Oh, I can't wait. And it's something, I did a column about Oleo Nuovo. I think it was in the Press Democrat last Sunday. Well, it was in the Sunday, the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, the day before Thanksgiving. It was all about Oleo Nuovo. And one of the most important things about it is how to use it right away. Enjoy it right away, liberally, abundantly, because it's not going to, don't be a miser with it, because the taste will drop off
since it hasn't
been bottled. So tell us about it. Tell us about the orchard, how many trees, what varieties.
We have 2 acres of three different varieties.
Mm-hmm.
We have tonight I brought the Arbequina for you to try.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got the Arbequina and the Arbasana. Those are our 2 Spanish varieties.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have Coroniki. And so we take those three, we separately harvest and mill them,
mm-hmm.
and then we separately bottle them and actually do a blend of all three that we call our Miller's mm-hmm. blend.
Where are you milling?
At Olive Leaf Hill Farms.
Olive Leaf, what
is that? It's south of Sebastopol.
What road?
I can't remember the name of the road it's on, but it's off of Bloomfield Road.
Oh, so maybe Canfield? Is it
yes, it is Canfield.
Okay.
Thank you.
I know exactly where it is. I just have
very nice facility.
I would love to see that facility.
Yeah.
So it's Olive Leaf, yes. I've been hearing about it, but never with the name.
Yeah, and they do their own oils, and they do custom milling.
Uh-huh.
And we don't have the equipment yet to do our own milling,
right.
So it's a great relationship we have uh-huh. with them.
So let's taste it.
All righty.
And while you're getting things ready, what kind of mill do they have? What kind of machinery?
Oh, shoot. It's an Italian name, but I can't think of it.
Is it... Paralisi?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Paralisi. So that's the horizontal decanter.
Yes.
With a hammer mill.
Yeah. And so they mill, then you go through malaxation,
mm-hmm.
which is a slow mixing to
mm-hmm.
allow the oil to coalesce,
mm-hmm.
and then you run through the 2 centrifuges.
Right.
One to separate the liquid from the solid. The second to separate the oil from the water.
Right.
And so I have 2 samples for you, both Arbequina,
mm-hmm.
one our current release. And then the Oleo Nuovo.
Okay, so the
same
release,
variety.
Yeah, the current release would have been pressed last year about
yes.
this time.
Yeah.
Okay, let's taste this. Still has a lot of flavor. Has a great texture.
Thank you.
Really nice texture. Where do you sell it?
At Oliver's Market, and we sell it at the Culinary Cafe
mm-hmm.
and the bookstore on campus.
Oh, great. Okay.
And we sell it direct, too.
So. Uh-huh. So people can contact you and get it.
Yeah.
Okay,
come on out to the farm and visit us.
And now the just pressed, the brand new baby oil. It's so young, it still cries at night.
Mm-hmm.
let's give Mike some indifferent. Normally I'd share, but I don't want to get you sick. That's got that's nice.
That's the polio.
This is the Nuovo.
Making me cough. Yeah.
That's the Nuovo. Got it, that nice trail of pepper down
mm-hmm.
the throat.
Yeah.
And then what was the third variety that you said?
Koroniki.
Koroniki, where is that one from?
It's Greek variety.
Okay, that's what I thought. I thought it was
the
Greek.
Pungency got me there.
Yeah, it does that. It does that.
And so this orchard was originally set up as an experiment.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, it was 2 acres. And the idea was to take olives from these large trees that you have to harvest by hand or with handheld machines and make it so you could machine harvest them.
Oh, really?
And so the trees are planted close together. They look like a very large vineyard. And
mm-hmm.
so the trees are 4 feet apart, 10-foot spacing on the rows,
mm-hmm.
and we do harvest these with a machine, a grape harvesting machine. That's they donate their services. We do have to pay for fuel and transport,
uh-huh.
But it's fantastic because picking olives by hand really sucks.
Really?
Yeah, there's no good way to put it. It sucks.
I love doing it.
Well, it's fun for a little while.
You know, I don't have to do it. Richley Evers of DeVero for years has had an olive picking party for everybody.
Yeah.
And I went for, I think, the first 10 years, and then I've gone intermittently since then. And I just loved it.
Yeah.
He has all, you know, he has the containers, there's a big strap that goes around your neck.
Yeah, and you have on your front. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, but I mean, you know, you're eating soup and drinking wine and talking to people. So, and we never harvested all of his fruit. He had professional people harvesting as well. We just did it for the one day.
And it's turning into big business now. Mm-hmm. I kind of liken the olive oil industry in California right now to where the wine industry was back in the 70s,
mm-hmm.
you know, where you've got all these cheap imports, and then you have a few upstarts that are making some really quality product, but they have to charge so much more. You know, it's a battle.
It's a hard thing. And Richley Evers, and some other people, he's the person I probably know the best, but also Yvonne Hall of Terrasavia. If you know, Terrasavia is in Hopland, and they have a pressing facility, and that's where DeVero goes. It's the closest. They have the stone grinder.
Oh, wow.
The stone grinder and then the hydraulic press.
Wow.
And that's the closest one to Sonoma County. So that's where DeVero, and they do custom pressing, as well as they have, I forget how many varietals. They have Italian varietals. And they sell at the farmer's market in Sebastopol.
Cool.
They make really nice olive oil. But, you know, DeVero was only oil for a very long time. And Ridgely finally realized, he said, you cannot turn a profit in California if the only thing you're producing is olive oil. And it has to do with the cost of land and the cost of labor.
Sure.
It's just not possible. So they now have a small winery and an estate vineyard as well. And their olive oil is still really important. But when it comes to actually keeping the farm thriving.
Yeah, I had their Carignano last night. It was very good.
It is. They're doing Mediterranean varietals. And I think they're doing a great job. So this is bottled. Is that a 375?
That's a 250.
250, okay.
Yeah.
So 250, what's it sell for?
Normal retail is 12, and we'll have it on for 10 this weekend.
For 10 at the weekend, okay. And so back to the weekend. It's on Saturday.
Yes, from 11 to 3.
11 to 3. And you will be tasting olive oil. You'll be selling Olio Nuovo.
Yes.
Bring your own container.
Yeah. And we will have our bottles. If you don't have a bottle, we can, you know, it'll be an extra $2. It'll go to the $10 price.
Okay, yeah.
But
You don't have to carry it home in a coffee cup or anything.
No. And we'll be tasting and selling our wines as well.
Okay. And then, let's talk a little bit about the wines before we move on to the other activities. And I see that you've brought, it looks like, two.
Yes. We have our Old Vine Zinfandel and our Pinot Noir.
Uh-huh.
And those are our two current releases. I'm going to be doing some more bottling very soon.
Mm-hmm.
And normally we have a Chardonnay and a Syrah as well.
Uh-huh.
And so they will be getting into the bottle very, very quickly here.
Uh-huh. And this is all grown there at Sherm Farm?
Except for the Zinfandel. This Old Vine Zin is from a vineyard off of Laguna Road, right across from Martin Ray Winery.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know that well.
It's the one of the oldest continuously operated Zin vineyards in the county.
Mm-hmm.
It was planted in the 1860s. Joseph Swan Vineyard used to do a vineyard designate with it called Laguna Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
And this is it's owned by a former JC employee,
really
Byron Craighead. He was in our sports medicine department. And he's got this 2-acre block, and it varies in production from half a ton to 2 tons.
Mm-hmm.
But still very low production. And it's fun.
Is that the old head prune vines?
Yes. Yeah, the low head prune vines. And it can, you know, look quite jungly sometimes.
Uh-huh.
But it's some great fruit out there.
Cool. And we will be tasting both of those?
Yes, we
just
will.
Shortly. And Chelsea, I want to bring you into the conversation. What's your role there?
I work at Schoen as a CSA distribution assistant.
Oh, great.
So I work in the community-supported agriculture.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm also the vice president of the Tiny House Club.
I so want to know about the Tiny House Club. But back to Chris for 1 second. What is your position?
I am a pavilion manager and winemaker out there.
Okay.
We do have a commercial winery, and we have an agriculture pavilion.
Mm-hmm.
So I manage that facility.
Oh, okay.
You know, make it ready for classes, and we also rent the place out for events.
Right.
And so it's get to wear a lot of hats in that job.
Yes. Yes. I've taught there and I've attended events there.
Yeah, so, it's a fun place.
It is, and what a view. What a gorgeous, gorgeous
and then,
view.
And I'm also adjunct faculty, and I teach a winemaking course.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and it's there at, on Eastside Road at...
It's at the corner of Eastside and Healdsburg-Trenton Road.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
And really just a remarkable place. We're so lucky to have that. Mm-hmm. So tell us about the CSA. Now, I think Deborah Walton was there for... Is she still there?
No.
Okay, I didn't think so. But I know she does. She's done a CSA for a long time through her Canvas Ranch.
Yeah. Yeah, she did the consulting for us to get things started.
Yeah, and I think that's how I knew that Shawn was doing a CSA. Is it year-round? Mm-hmm. Is it seasonal?
It's seasonal. Mm-hmm. We do a summer CSA and a fall CSA.
Uh-huh. And about how many members do you have?
We have about 100 members.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, yeah. Mostly faculty, some students, uh-huh. and then we also do a technology company, and SSU.
Oh, great. Yeah. And is it all delivery, pickup and delivery?
We do pickup and delivery, uh-huh. and then we also do, we sell to a few restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
We sell to, like, Shed and Backyard, and then we're connected with Feed Sonoma as well.
Oh, okay, yes. Great. Tell us about the CSA. What's the, you know, the last time I was at the farm, oh, God, I took a class, one of my classes did a tour there. But it's been a while. It's been a number of years, so mm-hmm. I'm not completely up to speed on what you're growing there now.
We're getting to the end of our fall season.
Sure.
So actually, this coming week is our last CSA week.
Mm-hmm.
So then we're going into the slow season to kind of prep for the spring, summer, and mm-hmm. fall next year.
And it's weekly, right?
It is weekly.
And what's it cost?
It's $25 for the big box, mm-hmm. and that feeds to about 3 to 4 family members,
mm-hmm.
about 6 to 9 items. And then we also do a student smaller bag that feeds about 1 to 2, and that's $11.25.
That's a great price.
Yeah.
That is.
Yeah.
How do you know how many students participate?
Oh, what would you say?
Maybe 20.
That's what I was thinking, about 20, 25.
About
20?
Uh-huh.
Maybe, yeah, about 20.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's really great.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to teach a CSA class. I've always thought that would be really fun to do.
Mm-hmm. That's how I got started in it, actually. Joey Smith, who's our garden coordinator, uh-huh. taught a CSA class.
Oh,
and
okay.
I took that last fall,
mm-hmm.
and I was just so fascinated by just our food and mm-hmm. putting my hands in the soil and
mm-hmm.
actually just enjoying Shawn, which is a beautiful
mm-hmm.
just farm and place to be. So then a year later, I started working in their CSA.
Uh-huh. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. We're going to take a little musical break, and we'll be right back here on Mouthful.
Tell me why you walked out on me. I'm so lonesome every day. I want you to know that since you walked out on me, nothing seems to be the same old way. Think about the love that burns within my heart for you. The good times we had before you went away. Oh, me. Walk right back to me this minute. Bring your love to me, don't send it. I'm so lonesome every day. Thank you. tell me why you walked out on me? I'm so lonesome every day. I want you to know that since you walked out on me, nothing seems to be the same old way. Think about the love that burns within my heart for you, the good times we had before you went away. Oh, me, walk right back to me this minute. Bring your love to me, don't send it. I'm so lonesome every day. I'm so lonesome every day. I'm so lonesome every day.
Tonight's music is by Sonoma County's own Kevin Russell, for the simple reason that I really love it. So that was the great Everly Brothers song, of course, Walk Right Back. So we're talking about, it's Shown Grown, but then there's a tagline. What's the name of the event?
It's a favor and...
Oh.
Share?
Let's see. We're going to be able to find it. Mike will find it.
It's our new tagline.
It is happening 11 to 3 next Saturday. And is there an admission charge?
No admission charge. No fee for parking.
And there's plenty of parking.
Yes.
Rain or shine.
Yeah.
Fun for the whole family.
Yes.
Reading. There's going to be lots of activities for kids.
Yeah. We will have a Santa in the tiny house.
Mm-hmm. And, Farmer Santa.
Yes, Farmer Santa. We'll have vine wreath making, so the kids can make their own vine wreath and take it home.
Oh, cool.
Just no charge for
oh, really?
If you want a photo with Santa, I'm not sure what... If there's going to be a charge on that or not, I don't
know. Unless they want to donate to the tiny house.
There we go.
But so tell us, what's the deal with the tiny house? What's happening?
So we came together, in this past summer. There was a few coworkers, and students that started talking about housing and affordable housing and student homelessness and tiny building, and we were interested in using the wood from Shone's Forest and milling our own wood. And then we started building a tiny model and forming basically a program that allowed students to design and build and live in the tiny house.
Wow. When at Shone Farm?
Yes.
Oh, wow. That is fascinating. Mm-hmm. I've done a couple of feature stories, magazine feature stories on tiny houses.
Okay, great.
I did one with, we all know him. He started Tumbleweed.
Oh, Jay Schaefer.
Yes, Jay Schaefer. He's been on Mouthful a couple of times.
Great.
So, yeah, I did. First, I did Jay Schaefer, a story just on him and his tiny houses. And then when he sold Tumbleweed and started his new, Four Corners.
Oh, I think it's Four Lights.
Yeah, I think it's Four Lights.
Yes.
And then Tumbleweed is now based over in Sonoma, but it's nationwide. The whole tiny house movement is just, it's fascinating to me. So tell me about the houses at Shone Farm.
So the houses right now, we just started with our first model.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still looking at funding and sponsorship.
Mm-hmm.
And the houses will be built on trailers, 8 by 20 trailers.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be milled on Shone, used by Shone's Doug Fir, and basically built by recycled materials and hopefully insulated with sheep's wool and different things like that.
Uh-huh.
Focused, we're still in the design phase, still in the program development phase. Mm-hmm. We're still consulting.
Now, is this a separate club or is there also a course?
This is a club right now.
Okay.
The goal being, and we've spoken to Leonard about this, who's our farm manager,
Leonard Diggs.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was going to be with us tonight, but he couldn't.
No.
He wasn't free.
We've been speaking with him about eventually turning it into a workshop and a program that students actually can get involved in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the eventual goal.
Mm-hmm. That's just great. When do you anticipate your first livable houses?
Oh, so we have a fundraiser coming up in March, and I can give you all those details. But
great.
March 5th will be our fundraiser, and that'll be kind of our project presentation and kind of bringing awareness to it.
Mm-hmm.
And through that, we will have Guido Frassini of Truegrass Farms mm-hmm. and the Farmers Guild, as well as Sonoma,
uh-huh.
come and speak about kind of just connecting future farmers with land and housing
mm-hmm.
and bring kind of all the sponsorship around it. So hopefully to get the funding we need and build our first home within the year.
That's great. It's such a great project. I just love seeing the really some national momentum about the tiny house movement now.
Truly.
And, you know, it's great.
We went to, we were able to represent Schoen Farm and the Tiny House Club in Washington, D.C., as well as Portland, Oregon. We went to Portland, Oregon for the Build Small, Live Large mm-hmm. summit by Dee Williams and Alan Durning. And that was fascinating to hear them talk about this tiny house movement. And then Robin, our secretary, went to D.C. To represent us as well. And that was at the ATE conference, the Advanced Technological Education. And it was the principal investigative conference in October.
Uh-huh. Great.
Yeah.
Great. That's, you know, Schoen Farm, you guys have done so many innovative things since, even before the facility was built.
Yeah.
So there's also a whole equine.
Yes. Yeah.
The portion there.
The farm is incredibly diverse.
Mm-hmm.
And just the size of the farm, I mean, 365 acres mm-hmm. and the diversity of that is just amazing when you consider we're just a community college.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you know, who else has this? I can't think of anybody.
Really?
And the problem is nobody knows about it. I mean, so that's why it's great to be on your show to try to get the word out.
Well, we'll have to be sure to get you back before mm-hmm. the March 5th fundraiser. We can talk about specifically about the fundraiser, maybe get some other information about tiny houses happening.
Yeah.
So great.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit, if you can, about the equine program.
Yeah, so we do have a horseback riding program out there, and we also have classes in equine anatomy and equine reproduction,
mm-hmm.
though we don't breed any of our horses.
Mm-hmm.
We just get them as grown up and trained horses.
Ah, okay.
but it's a great way to learn how to ride a horse. We have excellent instructors.
I didn't realize you had a horse riding program.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
It used to be over at Cloverleaf Ranch.
Oh, okay.
Then with the construction of the agriculture pavilion, they moved it out to the farm.
Uh-huh.
And we even have classes as diverse as we have an equine acupressure and massage class. And the students get hands-on training on that. It's just a two-day course.
Uh-huh.
And to see the horses getting the hands-on portion of it, they're loving it. They look like they're just mesmerized.
It's remarkably rewarding. Giving an animal a massage obviously rewarding for the animal, though you might not necessarily think about that randomly. But, you know, when I had my first little dachshund, and he had a back problem, and he was going to get x-rays, and the tech just came and got me and says, well, I'm going to go give him a massage first.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And that was the first time. It's like, really?
Yeah.
And he was just so relaxed and happy.
Yeah. Well, dogs give us so much. You know, it's nice to give them something back.
Absolutely. And then horses. Horses are pretty amazing creatures.
Yes. Yeah. They're very big, though.
Yeah, very
they scare me.
Yeah. I love them. I love them. I'm not around them a lot, though. So back to the event. So we've got wreath-making classes, Santa Claus.
Mm-hmm. We'll have the tiny house up as
a model.
You'll have a
model house. Mm-hmm. You'll have the olive oil tasting. You'll have the wine tasting. And I think I'm going to have you open the wine now.
All right.
So we can get to that. And then anything else going on with food?
Well, one thing that that is brand new for us that we're going to try out, because we've always had a grass-fed beef and lamb program out
there. Yes, I wanted to get to that.
But we are going to offer sales, or not, well, sales and tasting of the meat.
Oh, wow. Great.
So that's something that I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah, I sort of lost track. They were selling one day at the farmer's market. This is a while ago. And then I didn't see anyone again for a while.
Yeah.
So what's happening with that part, with the meat program?
You know, we do sell a lot to, at least of the ground beef, to the campus cafeteria. We sell it to the culinary cafe, and we've sold even to Sonoma State University.
Oh, what mouthful's favorite sound?
That was a pop.
We like that sound. Don't try to be quiet.
But so this will, I'm really excited about it because, you know, too many people don't know that we have meat, and so this will enable people to actually try it. And
now, is it available to the public or only at an event like this?
Really, that's a good question. I know we sell it to our CSA members, but I'm not sure if we really get it out to the public.
I don't know. I believe that we could make it happen if somebody was interested in it. They could contact our sales department. And we could see how that unfolds.
Okay, good. Because I would be interested. So you're doing beef and pork, you said.
Lamb.
Oh, beef and lamb. That's right. Yeah. Beef and lamb.
Yeah. No pork yet. No goats yet.
But you know, probably down the line.
Yeah.
And
we have had chickens for eggs before too.
Do you tend to have eggs most of the time?
They match the poultry class. So the poultry class is not running right now, so we don't have any chickens right now.
Okay, so only during the...
Yeah, we do have eggs for the CSA. It's one of our students. His name is James, and he started his own poultry business.
Oh.
So we funnel his eggs through our CSA program.
Uh-huh. Great.
Yeah, it's great to see our students having
Absolutely.
Successful businesses.
There was a young kid, I think he was still in high school, who started a duck egg business.
Really?
Yes. I wrote about him. It's been 2 or 3 years. You just, when you mentioned James, I thought about him. I have to go look it up and see if he's doing it. He would come to the Sebastopol Farmers Market, and I think he went to another farmers market as well. He had the most beautiful display, and his duck eggs were just so, I think he washed each one.
Yeah, you do have to wash them.
They were... they were beautiful and delicious, and
wow.
I'm hoping he was really young, though.
Wow. Well, don't let that stop you, though.
That's right, you know. I mean, for all I know, he's sold that business and gone on to another one.
Okay,
so tell us what we're trying.
Okay, so our first wine here is our 2012 Pinot Noir. This is from our estate, and so let me know what you think here.
Lovely.
That's all clone 777.
That's a lovely clone.
Yes,
I love that clone.
Yes, it is. And as you know, I mean, Russian River Valley is just world known for its Pinot Noir, and we try to stay true to that with our winemaking on this.
Very pretty, very silky. What's the alcohol?
It's a little, just below 14.
Okay, it's about just about what I would have guessed.
Yeah,
and yeah, it's in the delicate style.
Mm-hmm. And so we're doing a 4-day cold soak on this, and then we go through standard vinification on it. And it's not inoculated for yeast. It's not inoculated for malolactic. We go wild on that, but we do use commercial yeast on the fermentation.
What does Rich Thomas think?
He says, pour me more.
Good. I'll never forget a story. I hope I haven't told this story too many times, Mike. If I told the Rich Thomas Have I told the Rich Thomas story too many times?
I don't remember it. So
if you don't remember it, then I haven't. This one time I was a judge for the Harvest Fair. And you do remember? But yeah, it's the JC, I have to tell it. So, you know, and I would never try to know whose wine I was tasting. You know, I just played it straight. And so we go into the final. We have like 18, and you're going to pick the... sweepstakes winners. Yeah, sweepstakes winners. And this one wine that I had fought for, and I choose my battles really well. And there was this one wine I fought for getting a gold. And I won, and it ended up with a double gold.
Nice.
And so it was in the sweepstake tastings. And it was wine number 3. And
you're not supposed to know that.
No, you didn't know. You knew what it was. You just didn't know what the wine was.
Oh, okay.
You knew where the wine... And well, plus I could tell.
Okay.
I could tell. So yeah, there was the wine I had fought for. And it turned out to be my favorite of the reds. No question. And what I didn't know until afterwards was it was made by Gary Farrell. Not by Gary Farrell Winery, but by Gary Farrell. And I've always just adored Gary Farrell's hand. But I wasn't trying to look for Gary's style. It was just the style that I really appreciate it. And as we're walking, and I love Rich. As we're walking out, and he can bellow sometimes. We're walking out of the ballroom where the tasting took place, and that wine did not win the sweepstakes. And he walks out, he says, "What I want to know is who's responsible for putting number 3 in there. That was the wimpiest red wine."
Ouch.
It was okay, you know, and at the time I was much too shy to say anything to him, but later I've told him, and we both get a good laugh about it. It's just, you know, it's a different preference. I have a preference for very, very delicate ephemeral Pinot Noir, and he likes really big red.
In your face, yeah. Like he is.
Yeah.
But he has his own classroom now at the farm now.
Right.
It's one of the great things about the JC. They name things after you while you're still alive.
Yeah. I did. I resigned after being there from 91 to 13. I resigned. I'll never have a building named after me,
oh.
I guess.
Well, we'll do some.
Bureaucracy got to be a bit
you
much.
You want to sponsor a tiny house?
Yeah, yeah, I wish.
Yeah, we'll do
I
some.
I may need to live in one.
Some little commando naming for you out at the farm somewhere.
Look, it's the Michelle Jordan olive tree.
I'm shooting for having one of the lids on the septic tank named after me.
So. Hey, there you go.
I'll just scratch it in with a nail.
Could have gone with a wine barrel.
Or a wine barrel. Yeah, I guess a wine barrel sounds better.
So anyway, this is a lovely Pinot Noir. What's it retail for and where?
$18.
Good price.
And we retail at Bottle Barn, Oliver's. Not sure if we're at Whole Foods anymore. Andy's Produce, Big John's. So mainly all the local little
local,
guys.
Local. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
That's where we should all be shopping anyway.
Yeah.
So that is perfect. And now the next one is,
this is our 2012 Old Vine Zinfandel. So this is from the Craighead Vineyard. Yeah, no spit cups tonight, no spittoons. We're drinking it all here.
And poor Mike. Mike can't taste.
Somebody's got to work
on the air. That's right. Somebody has to drive the bus. Okay, so here we go. The 2012 old vines in.
Yeah, and I always get the question, what qualifies old vine? And truth be known, you know, there is no legal definition.
Right.
Truth in advertising does apply. Has to be relatively old. And this is from a very old vineyard. But when you manage a vineyard, you're replacing vines every year. So how many vines are from that original 1860 planting? Probably zero.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, truth be known.
Are they all still the low head prune, though?
Yeah, it is. And so you're taking budwood from the existing vines, so you are keeping that.
Yeah, I think if you're doing the budwood and you're doing the same style of planting, to me that qualifies.
And using, you know, the St. George rootstock, which is the wild grapes that grow in the creeks around here, and that's what everybody did. And really, I think it's the best combo for Zinfandel.
Uh-huh.
I think it really excels on St. George and with head training. You know, so many people have gone to cordon training and or vertical, you know, shoot positioning, just because you get more crop. But the head training actually suppresses the vigor of the vine. Zinfandel vine is crazy vigorous vine, and it just
and for
puts
people
out
who
so
don't
much
know,
crop.
That means vigorous vine means you're getting a lot of green stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And you get Zinfandel is just the most challenging grape to work with. As
really?
Far as,
now, I have never heard that before.
Well, it's because In all the other varieties, you have a primary crop and you have the second crop.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really easy to tell where your whole vineyard is as far as maturity.
Mm-hmm.
With Zinfandel, they just keep on putting out crop. And so you'll have, you know, look at this vine and you'll have raisins, dried out hard raisins to green fruit and everything in between. And so you just kind of throw up your hands and go, please God, tell me if this is ripe or not.
Yeah.
And
in the same bunch sometimes.
Yeah. And it's just, I've gotten more gray hair from working with Zinfandel than anything else.
Yeah, you usually hear people talk that way about Pinot.
Yeah.
But for different reasons.
Yeah, yeah. But really, I mean, you know, when you really get into it, Zinfandel is the toughest. And that's why you wind up with such crazy alcohol sometimes.
Oh, some of those 15.5%, I cannot drink those.
Yeah, and it's the only one where that's really accepted. You know, I mean, if you go to like the big Zap tasting down at Fort Mason, mm-hmm. I mean, people, you know, they're the real Zin heads are looking for that higher alcohol.
Yeah.
And it's the only label where you will see people proudly displaying, you know, in a font the same size sometimes as the Appellation, a 15.5-16% alcohol, where usually you would hide that.
You would hide it.
It really
would
make tiny font,
like,
you know,
exactly,
over on the side.
But
on Zin, you know, you have it proudly on display.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's a very
it's the reason I don't drink a lot of Zin. This is, what is the alcohol in this one?
We're actually right at 14. 14. On this.
It
so
is
it's
a lovely,
low for a Zin.
Yeah, it's really a very pretty wine.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's absolutely gorgeous.
Thank
really
you
gorgeous.
Very much.
The tannins are silky.
Mm-hmm.
There's no rough tannin.
Mm-hmm.
There's no bitterness.
Yeah.
It's in the delicate style. It's really quite
Thank
lovely.
You. Thank you.
And again, what does that one sell for?
We line price our red, so we're all 18.
18.
Yeah, so the Syrah would be 18 when we mm-hmm. get that into the bottle. And then the Chardonnay, we go 16 on the
16.
Chardonnay.
16. And no
so very reasonable.
No Sauvignon Blanc.
No Sauvignon Blanc anymore.
And no other whites?
Not yet. We do have I have an idea. You know, these won't be available out in the wholesale market. They would just be available in our tasting room
uh-huh.
when we operate our tasting room. But we have a student block of grapes. Has 54 varieties in 1 acre. We use it in the viticulture courses for grapevine identification.
Mm-hmm.
Once the VIT students are done, then my wine students get to go in and have at them.
Uh-huh.
And so I usually divide it up, just myself being the winemaker dictator of the class. I assign the different grapes to different lots, and so mm-hmm. there'll be lots like Italian white, Italian red,
mm-hmm.
You know, Rhone white, Rhone red, and so the students go in, find the vines, determine how ripe they are. When they're ready to pick, they pick, bring it back to the winery, make wine out of it. They package it up, and for now they're taking it home,
mm-hmm.
which they love. If they're 21. But my plan is to perhaps bottle some of these in the future because the wines turn out really good.
Mm-hmm.
We just had our presentations this last Thursday, and all the wines across the board were great wines.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would love to bottle up some of these
mm-hmm.
and actually put the students' names on the back label.
Oh,
winemakers
how cool.
have the list of the students as the winemakers.
That's makers. A great idea.
And you know, granted, some of these are going to be, you know, 4-case lots.
Sure.
You know, so it's going to be super
That's
small
okay.
production.
Uh-huh.
But it's going to be a really fun uh-huh. fun product to have in our tasting room.
Yeah. And do you have a number for overall how much you produce each year?
It varies, but around 400 cases.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So and we're starting to sell it all too. It was a little slow in the beginning, but
uh-huh.
but now things are really
so it's so
off.
Great to see it maturing. It's
yeah.
just it's wonderful. How about a little more music, Mike?
Canvas covered cabin in a crowded labor camp. Stand out in this memory I revive. 'Cause my daddy raised a family there with two hard working hands and tried to feed my mama's hungry eyes. He dreamed of something better, and my mama's faith was strong. But us kids were just too young to realize that another class of people put us somewhere just below. One more reason for my mama's hungry eyes. Mama never had the luxuries she wanted, but it wasn't 'cause my daddy didn't try. She only wanted things she really needed. One more reason for my mama's hungry eyes.
remember Daddy praying for a better way of life, but I don't recall a change of any size. Just a little loss of courage as their age began to show, and more sadness in my mama's hungry eyes. Mama never had the luxuries she wanted, but it wasn't 'cause my daddy didn't try. She only wanted things she really needed. One more reason for my mama's hungry eyes. Oh, I still recall my mama's hungry eyes.
You're listening to Mouthful of Smart Talk about food, wine, and farming. It's Michelle Anna Jordan, my guest this evening, Chris Wills and Chelsea Kobeck of Schoen Farm, Santa Rosa Junior College. What department, if this is the right question, is Schoen Farm? Is it under the Ag Department, under control of Ag?
Yeah, so it's the Ag and Natural Resource Management Department.
Okay. And who can take classes there? Can somebody just who's not like a full-time student?
Anybody
can take classes.
And we have, just from my wine classes, it's the full range of ages and interests, and from, you know, professionals to home winemakers, people that already work in wineries, and people that are just curious, grape growers. And so that I think that probably applies to all the other classes that we have out there. Because the Ag Department's incredibly diverse.
Yes.
I think there's 11 different programs under the Ag Department. Mm. So it's one of the craziest departments on campus. And our dean is just a saint.
Now, who is that?
Ganesan Srinivasan. We actually stole him from Fresno State University. He used to oversee their Ag Department and College Farm. And he has done wonders with our department.
How long has he been there?
Over 2 years now.
I think I met him.
Yeah, he's
pretty sure I met him.
He's a real kick, a great boss to work for. Mm-hmm. And
that's wonderful.
Yeah, it's really important. And he's a grant money finding fiend.
Oh,
he finds us so much money. I've bought so many toys in the last 2 years. It's amazing. And so we've got a lot of neat things in the pipeline that are coming your way.
Anything you can tell us about?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we've got a beer brewing program.
Oh, great!
Starting up,
are you going to grow hops?
You know, we have been approached at that. I've spoke to some of the local brewers, and they said the best hops are coming out of Washington, and
do
that we don't have the long enough day length here.
Do you talk to Brian Hunt?
No, but I know he has his own.
Yes, you need to talk to Brian Hunt.
Okay.
He will talk to you about growing hops.
Okay.
All right. He's considered the brewmaster's brewmaster.
Excellent.
Any brewmaster around, if you mention Brian Hunt, they, you know, genuflect practically. He's the one who tell you. And, you know, this used to be any huge hop growing area.
Oh, yeah.
And it wasn't the lack of daylight. It was a virus.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and they're so beautiful.
There's also, so there is a group of local hop enthusiasts that want to start growing hops here again. And there's also a group that wants to grow grain here. And your friend Deborah Walton is key in
that. Well, she's growing farro and some other things. And now there's I just bought barley. I think it was from Foggy River Farms.
Yeah,
I bought purple barley from them. And I know Lou Preston has been growing a number of grains out at Preston.
Well, and it's something that we could actually grow in between the rows of vines, too. Because it could be a winter crop when the vines are doing nothing.
It's a great
Why
idea.
Why not? You know?
Yeah.
One that I would love to do, because I've dabbled in brewing, is malt my own barley. And, you know, even if it's on a small scale, but, you know, with beer, freshness is everything.
Everything.
And if you could malt the barley and take it from the roaster into the kettle, holy cow. I mean, the aromatics on that might be just fantastic.
Yeah.
So who knows? Well, we're into trying new things out at Schoen Farm, so we're going to look into that.
And then start experimenting with some sour beers.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. I took brewing when I attended Davis 30 years ago, mm-hmm. and I love how the industry has just turned on its head now, because yes. things like sour beers were considered flawed. They were defective beers that you would pour down the drain, and now they're embracing them.
I was stunned by the first sour beers I tasted.
Yeah.
Stunned.
Because I'm not cider-like almost.
Yeah. And I'm not a hops person, partly because I think I'm allergic to hops. I have a very... I like the taste, but it has such a bad reaction that...
Well, now, how about this? So, little idea. I shouldn't say this on the air because it might give other people ideas, but I'm thinking for a bittering component instead of hops, how about olives? Think of the marketing for that. You could call your beer Olive Me.
Okay, we just went over the cliff. That's interesting.
It might be horrible, but you know.
Yeah, I'm going to leave that with you.
Like the carnies say, you can't win if you don't try.
That's absolutely, you know, no, there's no such thing as a failed experiment if you've learned something from it.
That's right.
No, I've just been fascinated by the sour beers, partly because I can drink them and not have the reaction that I get from hops. Yeah. And I find that the really strong IPAs that have gotten so popular, the double and the triple IPAs, they're as hard to pair with food, I think, as, say, a big, buttery, oaky Chardonnay. You know, it's a smaller spectrum of foods that make those wines taste better.
Yeah.
Or those beers taste better. But I find sour beers really go beautifully with a lot of foods.
Yeah. And how they're embracing Brettanomyces, you know, spoilage yeast,
right?
Is just fascinating to me.
Yeah,
and their mantra is, if you're nice to Brett, it's nice to you.
Interesting.
So we'll see. I'm still not ready to try any Brett in my wines intentionally.
Yeah,
but for beer,
yeah, that one's
who knows?
New territory for me as well. I'm hearing about it, but it's like, okay, I'll get there
Woodfore
at some point.
Out in the Barlow,
does
great
Woodfore.
Brett beers. Yeah,
yeah.
So,
yeah, I haven't had it. You know, whenever I go to Woodfore, you know, I get whatever sour they have.
Yeah.
So, interesting. So beer, maybe growing grapes.
Well, we were already.
I meant grains.
Yeah.
And, grains, maybe growing
and
hops.
I did discover that as a bonded winery, we can actually distill alcohol.
You can.
We can't sell the alcohol. We have to use it internally. But so I went out
what
and
does
used
that
some
mean?
Of that grant money to buy a still. So
but what
I
does it mean
still.
To use it?
So you can use it to fortify wines.
Oh, okay.
And so
you can make brandy, for example.
No, we can't make brandy.
We can't make brandy.
Because then you're selling a spirit.
Port.
But we can make port-style wines, yes.
Oh, okay.
And I'm even thinking, well, you know, I mean, maybe I'll do a port-style apple cider. Or maybe a Angelica-style apple cider. Because I've experimented around, and cider, hard cider and apple juice are in our future, too. And I've experimented around making ciders. And so far, I'm just not liking my results. it's discouraging as a winemaker.
What's the problem with the results?
They all just seem kind of bland, and you know, compared with grape wine, I'm doing something wrong there.
Uh-huh.
But you know, if I don't know if you're familiar with Angelica making, you're actually just fortifying juice, and so it always tastes so good when it's fermenting, when it still tastes like apple juice.
Mm-hmm.
But once all the sugar's gone, it's just kind of what happened, you know. What am I going to do with this now?
Because I've been enjoying some of the local hard ciders.
Yeah. So they've got something on me there that I have to take them out for a beer and pry it out of them.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Some technique that I'm not doing.
But do you think it's technique or do you think it's variety of apples?
Probably both.
Yeah.
And because it seems like the cider apples have really strong tannin character to them. And I'm working more with the juice varieties, the table
Gravenstein
varieties. Gravenstein, Gala, Honeycrisp I've even tried, you know, and they taste great as juice, but once you get all that sugar gone, it's like, where'd it go? No, it just tastes like water now.
And speaking of where did it go, we're just about out of time, believe it or not. So we're going to just... Let's go over things. First of all, if people want to find out about classes, they just go to santarosa.edu.
Yes, we have a fantastic website.
And do they just put in agriculture for the department?
Yeah, there's a whole department webpage.
Okay.
There's a webpage for Schoen Farm. There's a webpage for the winery.
Okay.
It's a multiple layers to that webpage onion. And so just go in there and
peel
dig
away.
Around. You will find gems.
Okay. And then for next Saturday, it starts at 11.
Yes.
Continues until 3 o'clock. There is no charge, but bring money. And you're going to be selling olive oil, wine, and meats from the farm, right?
Yes. And I believe the Tiny House people will have some fundraising products there to sell.
Oh,
as well.
Great.
We'll have some treats. And some tickets for our gala dinner, which is a farm-to-table dinner.
And is that the March 5th event?
It is.
Okay, and
yes.
I will be talking more about that. That's really great.
And we might have some of our cured olives this year, too.
Oh, that's right, in the press release,
yeah,
which I guess Marie Gaversa's students worked on that press release.
Her
they
marketing
mentioned
class.
The cured olives.
Yeah, so this is our first year we cured olives, and we'll be teasing the public with those.
Uh-huh. Okay, anything else? We've probably got, another minute? Got another minute. Anything else? Don't miss this opportunity to talk to people. Anything else you want to say? You want people to reach out to you directly for anything? You can give an email address.
Sure. My email is cwills@santarosa.edu. That's C-W-I-L-L-S. And just sure, if you have any questions about Schoen Farm, shoot me an email, and I'll be more than happy to answer them.
Good.
And you can just visit the farm, too. It's an open California state facility.
Mm-hmm.
So come on out and just look around sometime.
Should you call first, or can you just show up?
You can just show up.
Wow, that's
regular,
cool.
Regular business hours,
right.
8 to 5, Monday through Friday.
Mm-hmm.
But for our events, just come on out for those, too.
Great. Chelsea, if people want to reach out to you to get either, do you have to be a student to be involved in the Tiny House Club?
Yes,
okay.
You do have to be a student, but we are doing volunteer. We're doing volunteer bill days. We're
great
consultants and everything like that. We're seeking help. So,
okay, so how do people reach
So there's
you?
A website. We have, it's www.srjctinyhouseclub.org. And then there's a GoFundMe page, which is www.gofundme.com/srjctinyhouse. And then we also have an email, and that's srjctinyhouse@gmail.com.
Great. Okay.
All three ways.
And on that note, we are out of time. Meet me back here next week for another yummy episode when Mary Risley of the famous little cooking school, Tante Marie's in San Francisco, joins us. It's been about 17 or 18 years since she was last on Mouthful, and she's got some great stories to tell and some great advice for your cooking life. So have a great week. It's Michelle Anna Jordan here on Mouthful, Smart Talk about Food, Wine, and Farming on KRCB Radio 91.
Grapes are covering the grassland, they're piling up for family farms, selling.